Canmore. Doors will open on the left.
How's it going, everyone? Welcome to episode 19 of Entering Kenmore. I am David Azer alongside Zach Coe. Zach, I always like to tee you up with something, but man, the last week we have had, I got nothing. So,
yeah, I don't really have much either. This team sucks.
Yep.
Sucks and blows, Mike. They suck. No two ways around it. They're a bad baseball team. The Los Angeles Angels come into Fenway Park and find a way to take two out of three, and the Red Sox tried their damnedest to lose that last one. Yeah, everything sucks.
Everything sucks. I can't even say that we're at rock bottom anymore, because something worse is coming next week. That's where we're at this point. I've tried to be optimistic throughout this entire dumpster fire of a season thus far. No more. I have nothing left to give.
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of talking about it after Tuesday night's game. We were like, yeah, man, we're really cooked, aren't we? And it's like, yeah, sure are. We had a pretty lengthy trade deadline discussion.
In June.
Where I built a super team. I built the most MLB The Show franchise mode ass roster that you're ever going to find. But what a roster it would have been.
What a blessing it would be to watch that team that Zach created at, what, like midnight?
Yeah. It was fresh after getting home from doing Spanish radio. I was angry. I was high. It was like I was just sitting outside in the dark next to the pool with like the like light hitting off the pool and just like just smoking my joint and just cooking.
Like Walter just White sitting out there.
Yeah, literally just alone in my backyard at like 12:30, just stewing in anger over the Boston Red Sox, smoking a joint, cooking up the greatest roster that has ever been seen.
I mean, what else is there to do at this point? You drop two out of three to the Los Angeles Angels.
You say that too, and I said that all series. It's like, it's the Angels, figure it the fuck out. And then you look at the standings, and like at one point this series, the Angels passed the Red Sox in the standings.
Yeah, we're not
so
that
like, this
far
is
off.
The team that you are. This is the team you are. You're now one game ahead of them in the standings. Like this is the type of team we're at. Like, and we did it with the Orioles too. Like, it's the Orioles, figure it the fuck out. You're not that far off from where the Orioles are, which is, it's pathetic. It's maddening. It's this team. At first it was a joke in the meme, but like fun Boston Red Sox fact, I hate them. I do. I fucking hate this team. I have futures on them to win the AL East. I have their win total. I have them to win the pennant. I have them to win the World Series. And this is what they're doing. Like that. And yes, like sure, some of those were a little bit homerish of picks, but like also like that's what the expectations for this team were. Like playoffs were a bare minimum.
And at this point, we're just hoping to play competitive baseball in the second half of this season. And I don't even know if we're going to get to that point.
I'm hoping to make it to the All-Star break before being set like definitive sellers. Like the Orioles are already telling teams that they're selling, and how many games worse than the?
They're only four games worse than.
They're four games, yeah. They're four games worse than the Red Sox right now, and they're already like definitively sellers. They have a negative 88 run differential. You have a plus 13 run differential, and you're 30-34.
It's just putrid, and it starts with the starting pitching.
Lose by one.
Yeah, and the starting pitching has done you no favors this last week, aside from Crochet, which we knew going into the year. He was going to be your workhorse. He was going to be your number one guy. They didn't bring in anybody else. So whether or not people had question marks on Crochet heading into this season, I think he's all but gotten rid of all of those. I think he may have even exceeded my expectations so far this year. But behind him, you have a whole pile of slop. It's the best way I can put it.
Yeah, not great. And I'll separate this because the bullpen hasn't been the issue this year. It has been in years past, but for the sake of the stat, this is a stat I gave last week. Since the Red Sox started the first month of last season as the best pitching staff in baseball. They now rank, if my Fangraphs wants to load from the new update, where they now rank 21st in starter ERA at 4.28. That's right there with the White Sox, the Orioles, the Dodgers, surprisingly, the Nationals, the Diamondbacks, the Angels. That's the group that you're in. So I now have more than enough evidence to say that Andrew Bailey's a fraud. That's 196 games, over 1,000 innings of baseball from your starters. And it's just like Cora called them out in Tuesday's press conference. He said, we need more from the pitching staff. And I kind of took that as a shot at Breslow because Breslow's the pitching guy and Bailey is his like handpicked pitching guru, pitching savant. And he was just like, yeah, the pitching isn't good enough. We're not getting deep enough into games. And part of that is the reclamation projects. I'm so sick of the fucking reclamation projects. I don't need any more Liam Hendricks. I don't need any more James Paxton. I don't need Lucas Giolito. Even to a certain extent, I don't need Walker Buehler. I need guys that are established big league starters, not Lucas Giolito, who finished top five in Cy Young voting in 2021. Like, this is 2025. He's rinsed. He's washed. He sucks. Like, you signed him off of him being the worst pitcher in baseball in 2023. Then his elbow explodes, and you're like, all right, let's rely on this guy to give you 200 innings of a 4 ERA. Like, he can turn it on and off sometimes, but that's almost more frustrating because it just keeps buying him a longer and longer leash. And, like, at this point, I'm ready to cut bait on him. Like, you said it last episode. Like, we're holding on to these veterans that are showing us that they're washed just for way, way, way too long.
Yeah, and I'm tired of the benefit of the doubt of these guys, not to mention Patrick Sandoval, who is another reclamation project, who now,
yeah, I forgot about him.
Who knows when he comes back, but when he does, you can bet your ass that he's going to be pitching innings for this team, and they're going to be relying on him. Oh, Patrick Sandoval is our trade deadline acquisition. I mean, who knows if it gets
that
bad, but I'm waiting for that, because that's what they've done the past couple of years. Come trade deadline season, but even
have
still,
no fear, Pat Sandy is here.
Yeah, thank God, for Patrick Sandoval.
Oh my, Patrick Sandoval is here to save the season. He hasn't pitched in 2 years. He wasn't that good when he did.
Nope.
And here he is to save the season. They have a bunch of number fives, is what they have.
Yeah,
like maybe one. Bueller's a three on his good days. I don't think he's a two. And then they just have a whole bunch of number five. So you have a top three pitcher in baseball. I think the three best pitchers in baseball are pretty clearly Skeens, Skuball, and Crochet.
Yep.
And then like maybe throw Yamamoto in there, and it's four of them. And so you have one of the four best pitchers in baseball, and then you have number three on his good days, and then you have six number fives. And that's the rotation you're trotting out there. Like, I don't understand how this was the roster construction. Like, how was everybody? Like, it wasn't just us. It wasn't just certain fans. It was everybody saying they're an arm short. They should go out and get a starter. There's a clear outfield logjam. Go out and trade an outfielder for a like solidified number two behind Crochet. They were like, the best we can do is Walker Buehler. Did you see how good he was in the playoffs?
Yeah.
That's what they sold us. He was really good in the. Sure, he fucking sucked balls in the regular season, but did you see how good he was in the playoffs? And this isn't an attack on Walker Buehler. He's been fine, but he just hasn't been the number two that we need behind Crochet. I mean, especially when you see what Giolito and Fitz are giving you.
Especially when you were leaning on Bayo to come back and take a step forward this year. He hasn't done that at all. We're going to jump around a ton. Yeah, we're going to jump around a ton this episode because this whole series, the Brave series, they won. Cool. Don't really care when you following series, you lose to the Angels. And Brian Bayo in his start was decent. He went six innings, but even still, the swing and miss has been down all season. And that was your number two guy. He was your opening day starter last year simply because you didn't have anybody else. And he's a young up-and-coming guy, but sooner or later he has to figure it out. This is year three or four now, and he's still consistently mediocre.
The only thing he's... Go ahead. Go on.
Just this is a guy that you were banking on. This is a guy you extended early, and we're seeing signs every so often that he can be a pretty quality number two or number three starter, but it just hasn't come together at all this year. And you were really hoping it did. You got a bunch of veterans behind him that shitting the bed every fifth day. And it's just, it's a dumpster fire of a rotation. Sooner or later, someone has to take the blame for it. And I think that falls on Andrew Bailey.
Yeah. Well, it's the, my Twitter header. Is that what they call it? The like picture at the top. It's a picture from the 2013-14, something like that, playoffs for the Bruins. And it says the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, and Tampa Bay Lightning fans. I'd like to add the Andrew Bailey Pitching Lab onto that poster because those are now four things that do not exist. Like I said, the starters are the bottom third, 22nd in baseball since that hot first month. Like at some point we have to see it. Andrew, like, where is it? Like, and I know he's not going anywhere because of his relationship with Breslow, but like at this point we need to be looking for a new hitting coach and a new pitching coach because Fatsy sucks and so does Bailey. Like, we're repeatedly seeing guys regress. Tanner Houck, they banished to the shadow realm. They put him in the Yoshida machine and said go away. He was that bad. He was unusable. Brian Baio regressed. You extended him early. You thought you could build something with him, and he's been terrible. Looking at his Savant page here, he's not missing any bats. He's not generating any chases. He's walking 11.6% of the batters he faces. He's got a high ground ball rate, but he's also 60th percentile hard hit percentage, so he's giving up just absolute scorchers on the ground. And it's only a 3.91 ERA, but the FIP and everything else will tell you that he's been incredibly lucky to escape with a 3.91 ERA.
Absolutely. And even the eye test is pretty clear. Yeah. Like, we don't need to do a deep dive in the stats to be like, he just doesn't have it this year.
Yeah. Like, he's not throwing enough strikes. The changeup is completely disappeared. I mean, that was, we're talking about what was his best pitch. It's just completely gone away. This was a couple weeks ago. Lenny DiNardo said that it was like a, it was a batting practice fastball is what his changeup looked like sometimes. Which again, it's still like 90 miles an hour, but, and I wouldn't be able to hit it. But like when you have another pitcher being like, oh, he's throwing BP out there, like Jesus Christ. Like at some point we have to see it from Andrew Bailey. At some point we have to see it from Craig Breslow. I said it in the last episode, we're seeing these strides be made in the minors with some of these guys, but at a certain point it doesn't really matter if it's happening in the minors. All these guys are so far off. We need to see it in the big leagues, and we need to see it now because the season's slipping away and the rotation is the main culprit of that. I mean, you just can't be giving up seven runs in the first inning. Like Richard Fitz, the Angels made history at Fenway Park on Monday night when they hit three first inning home runs. It was the first time it's happened in the history of Fenway Park. It's fucking 110 plus years old, and it's the first fucking time that a team has ever done that. You can't be getting in a six run hole before you even get up to the plate, like, and you end up losing 7-6 there. If Richard Fitz doesn't go in there and throw up all over himself, which is not even necessarily his fault because he was rushed back from his rehab assignment, like, You win that game if he even is slightly better. Like, you get any more, like, not halfway decent even. Like, one less run. Like, was there was an error in that first inning, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think it was Toro.
Yeah. So, like, we're talking, like, these are the, they don't do, Lou said it, they don't do the little things enough to win. Little margins that you can look back at and say, this is how we lost a game. Like, having an unearned run in the first inning and they score six instead of five. Or any number of things. It's just they don't do those things on the margins to win. And, like, that's what bad baseball teams do. They don't do enough little things to win. And the fact that this team has the pieces to be so good is what makes them so annoying. Because they don't do the little things to win. And it's just, it mounts the frustration. Like, that's the, having a, rooting for a sloppy baseball team is, like, the most frustrating thing on the planet. Because they're in so many of these games. And if you can, it, like, it's not nitpicking at a certain point when these are things that stand out. I mean, the first two games, they had five errors. It should have been six because Abraham Toro got an absolute gift from the scorer.
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah. But while you were saying that, one of my dad's favorite quotes in sports is bad teams find ways to lose. He hits it with me
all the time.
And going into this season, we were like, this is a good team. On paper, this roster has playoff aspirations. And not only that, has World Series aspirations. Both of us, like you said, probably a homer pick. But it wasn't just us. It was national reporters. It was the smartest minds in baseball media were having the Red Sox in the World Series.
Or the hot pick.
Exactly. Where we're at now is I have some thoughts on Richard Fitz because I fired off that tweet. I went to this game. Unfortunately, I paid money to watch this game. And
I got paid money to watch that game. So that
it was a little bit better. Just a little bit. Yeah. But regardless, Richard Fitz, one inning of work, four hits. 6 runs, 5 earned, 1 walk, 3 homers, like you said. This is a guy who, yes, maybe they needed him last week in Milwaukee. They gave him the rehab start of sorts. It was 3 innings in Milwaukee, and he was okay. I don't understand why we don't just send him back to AAA when he clearly isn't ready. If you're going to put him on an innings limit, a pitch limit in Milwaukee, and then just be like, okay, you're fine, go back out there. Clearly, they rushed him back because of a need. And not only that, Hunter Dobbins comes in right after him and pitches
fantastic.
A pretty solid gem out of the bullpen.
Yeah, gave up one run. He gave up a home run.
What did Hunter Dobbins do with his chance in the rotation to warrant taking him out for a guy who clearly isn't ready to come back yet?
So here's kind of where I stand on things. I think maybe this is a move where Lucas Giolito finds himself getting phantom IL'd here pretty soon.
God willing.
So Fitz has to go down for at least 15 days after being optioned, unless there's an injury. So I think maybe you give Lucas Giolito another start or two and see if he can kind of figure it out and piece some things back together, which based on the trends he's having this season, he's going to throw like 6 shut in one of these games and look like prime Lucas Giolito again and save himself. But I think if one or two of these next 3, say, from Giolito are blowouts, then we see phantom IL and Fitz back up after stretching himself back out.
Yeah, that's what I would do, to be honest, because even if Giolito is going to give you a gem every other start, I can't bank on that. I can't bank on that when it seems like every game now is a must win. And it's June. It's still early, but we're getting to that point where you can't afford to be washing away wins at this point because you want to, let's see if Giolito can figure it out.
If Giolito has one good start where he puts you in position to win and then has one blow-up start where he completely porks you, you're just a 500 baseball team pretty much. Because and that's assuming that you win all the games that he's good in and lose all the games he's bad in, obviously, which he was fucking trash yesterday and you found a way to win. So, obviously you can't just make those assumptions, but I would say that on average you'd be an exactly 500 team in Lucas Giolito starts if that happens. And at this point, they 500 is obviously not good enough to get into the playoffs, but now they need to go well above 500 to even have a chance to sniff the playoffs. And I'll find the tweet right now, but Red Sox stats said it. The numbers that they need to hit to line up with some of the final wild card teams in the AL the last couple of years, they need to turn it around and turn it around fast.
Yeah. And are either of us confident in that? I don't think so.
No. I would be shocked if they, let's see. Let me see if I can find this tweet quickly. Where the hell was it? This was before. If the Red Sox, the Red Sox won, they will need to go 57 and 40 the rest of the way to reach the average winning percentage of the AL's recent final wild card slot winners. It's a 592 winning percentage, almost a 600 winning percentage. You think they have any chance of going 57 and 40?
No. I would feel maybe a little bit more optimistic about that if they didn't play down to every single bad team.
Well, it's like we always say, Cade Povich is Randy Johnson and fucking and Tyler Anderson turns into prime Pedro, and yep. Yusei Kikuchi is Clayton Kershaw. It's just, it's always fucking something. Like, finally, Jose Soriano, a shit bum. They actually made fucking pay for being a shit bum. But it just happens far too often that they turn these absolute scrubs into Cy Young candidates. The Bruins do the same shit with terrible goalies. They get absolutely destroyed by dog shit goalies, and it drives me nuts. And the Red Sox do the same thing with starting pitchers that fucking suck. Like, they'll put up five against Skubal, or they had a decent showing against Reagans. But Cade Povich, you think again, friend. Emerson Hancock is going to dice you up. Like, it's drives me fucking nuts, which means, like, I think Fatsy should go. Every single year that Pete Fatsy has been here, they have the same issues. They strike out way too much. They can't hit left-handed pitching, and they're pedestrian at best with runners in scoring position. And it's those same mistakes that haunt them every night. When we're talking about losing games by one run, it's one plate appearance where you're over-aggressive with runners in scoring position. In the game they lost on Tuesday, they had David Hamilton on second and nobody out in the ninth inning and didn't walk it off. Like, and Duran was up. They pinch ran. Christian Campbell walked. They pinch ran Hamilton for Campbell. Hamilton steals second. Duran, Devers, and who was batting third that night? It was Willier. They pinch hit Willier for Rob Refsnyder. They fucking, I remember Duran struck out, Devers popped out, and Willier struck out is what it was, I believe. Like these are the guys, and you can't rely on these guys to perform in clutch situations all the time. But, like, these are the type, like, what more could you want than the top of your order coming up against Kenley Jansen with your fastest base runner on second base and nobody out? Like, this is just about putting the ball in play, and two of the three strike out. Like, it's just not a good approach.
Yeah. And I think I said it last episode, but at some point you just need to make an example out of someone, whether that be Andrew Bailey or Pete Fatsy or both. I think we're kind of both campaigning to get them both the hell out of here. But at some point, something needs to change. And it seems like we're on the verge of that. But I just don't know where that change comes from.
It's not going to be Bailey. I would be absolutely floored if it was. If it was Bailey, then that means Boss Man came down and said, Andrew Bailey's out of here. And I don't want that either. Like, I like John Henry in the role where he's writing the checks, but has no bearing on the baseball operations department, because I think all of them know more about the sport than he does. So I like the role that he's in now. Like, he shows up to yell at Breslow to stop asking Devers to play first base. And then that's it. Like, he goes to Liverpool, celebrates the Premier League championship and all that. And he's just going to keep cutting checks. Like, I don't need him going to Breslow being like, "Hey, your buddy's out of here." But I do think that I think it's time for that, because clearly this shit is not working.
Clearly it's not working. And I'm kind of sick of hearing about people saying that change needs to happen. And we were texting about this earlier too. Why does the change need to start with Alex Cora? Wouldn't you start with some of the assistant coaches first?
They need to get Veritek in there. He's the captain. He'd be a fucking awesome manager guy.
Here's the thing is,
Jason Veritek sucks at his current job. He's the game planning coordinator and run prevention coach. He's preventing zero runs. Like, what does he do? Like, no offense to Jason Veritek. And I saw old people on Twitter, boomers on Twitter, were like, "Oh, these people were born after 2010 and don't understand what Veritek means for this franchise." Okay, that doesn't mean he's a good manager. What about Jason Veritek makes you think that he'd be a good manager? And don't just say, "Oh, he's the captain." Like, that's what all these people, like, they don't have any tangible reasons why Jason Veritek would be a good manager. They just like him because he was a former player.
Well, that's my point, is not even just pertaining to Veritek, but who out there is a better option right now than Alex Cora? I just don't, no names come to mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so tough because make a change like that. Like, if you're going to replace a manager like Cora, it has to come in the offseason, I think.
Right.
Because, like you said, like, who's the guy that – because, like, I think Breslow would just promote Andrew Bailey, who we both just said we want fired. So, like, I'm out on that. Like, I think if you were going to make a managerial change, then it comes in the offseason because you have way more options in front of you.
Yeah, and even still, like, no names come to mind where I'm like, yeah, I would get Alex Cora out of here to replace him with whoever. Like, I just don't see why this change needs to start with Alex Cora. Because, yes, like we've said, this has been probably his worst managerial year so far. But
my one concern is just that the voice has gone stale. I think that's kind of fair to question at this point because, I mean, he said it himself. Like, at some point it has to fall on me. We keep making the same mistakes. Like, I tell – and even it – dating back to Milwaukee, he's like, I tell guys, like, we can't be too aggressive doing, like, it was talking about Marcelo getting thrown out at third, but I mean, Rafaela in that Milwaukee series, he just has his head down and he fucking rips around second base and Connor Wong standing on third, like, he slid into third base, like, he didn't even look up for a fucking heartbeat. He was just chugging around. Like, at some point, these little mistakes, I mean, these are the, like I said, these are the mistakes that cost you games. Like, if how many of these games, if just one thing goes different where you don't fuck up in one tiny situation, are you winning? Like, you're at least a 500 baseball team, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, my dad was telling me the numbers a couple days ago. He said, well, I know it's like 17 one-run losses, but even if you win half of those, you're in a much better spot.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, I don't understand why, like, they can't figure it out, which leads me to, like, to just question whether or not, like, I know Cora's not going anywhere. I just said it, the logistics of firing a manager like Alex Cora to replace him with somebody that is, like, at least on a similar level as him, it has to be done in the offseason because all those people that are of a similar caliber manager are already managing Major League Baseball teams.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's 10 weeks into a 3-year extension, but I don't know. If it has to come back on Cora at some point, the little mistakes, like, I just question whether or not the message is going stale. And I know he said that, oh, you only get 3 players only meetings a year, so you have to use them wisely. I feel like we used to get reporting on, like, every single players only meeting that happened in the history of baseball. And I would find it absolutely stunning to find out that the Red Sox haven't had a meeting where Duran or Crochet or Bregman or anybody just said, all right, coaches, get the fuck out. We need to pull our heads out of our asses right fucking now because this season's slipping away. It hasn't been reported, but I would be angry if that has not happened yet.
Yeah, and it seems like a lot of the players on this roster are those types of guys, like you said, like a Bregman, a Crochet, a Duran. The leaders of your team should be.
If Alex Verdugo can call a players only meeting, fucking Connor Wong can call a players only meeting.
I wouldn't go that far.
I mean, maybe not that far, but like anybody needs to just like. Yeah. And I know that I forget who said it. I heard it yesterday, or maybe it was today. I forget who said it. Maybe it was Will Fleming on the broadcast. That. People have said it feels like a ghost when you're injured. You just can't lead in the same way. So maybe that eliminates Bregman. But, like, I think Jaron Duran's a leader on this team, and I think he'd be the perfect guy to get up there and motherfuck everyone.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I'm just sick of the trade rumors surrounding Duran as well. We talked about that last episode, right?
No. We didn't report Monday.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, maybe now is as good a time as ever. If you haven't heard, Jaron Duran has been circulating in some trade rumors from the Padres who have been saying they're interested in him. But to me, and we put out the Twitter poll earlier this week, I think it ended up being 50-50 in terms of who would you rather trade, Abreu or Duran.
It was tight.
And it was 50-50. It was close, even if it wasn't straight down the middle. But either way, I think people are divided on this. Is it 50-50?
Yeah, 50-50. Yeah, exactly.
So it's a question, to say the least. But I think Jaron Duran is much more of a leader than Willie Abreu is. And he's just the overall more dynamic player. So
Yeah, I mean, so I voted for Durant. We had this conversation in the off season on a couple of our first episodes. So we've been split on this literally since episode one. I just think that Durant is a guy that you sell high on. He has less years of control, and his primary asset is his speed. And I just don't know what kind of hitter he becomes if he loses his speed. And that's typically one of the first attributes to go. Now, I don't think the Padres line up even a little bit on a potential deal like this, because they only have one good prospect worth your time, Leo DeVries. Yeah. And they said that Dennis Lynn from The Athletic, he's the one who had the report that likely DeVries wouldn't be on the table for Duran, but anything can happen. We know AJ Preller's super aggressive in deals like that. So anything can happen. But even then, like, I think that's just such a white flag to the fans being like, all right, Jaren Duran's out of here for an 18-year-old in high A. So I just don't think that's the move. But yeah, for me, I it's a great problem to have. Like, I don't want to trade Jaren Duran or Willie Abreu, to be honest with you. I would just move Zidane Rafael into the infield and call up Roman Anthony and then figure it out in the offseason. Like, I don't think this – if this is a move that you're making this season, then you're waving the white flag either way.
Absolutely. And the Zidane super utility agenda only grows when he had a series like he did against the Angels, because he was –
it doesn't even need to be – it doesn't even need to be super utility. Just fucking send Trevor Story to the bench.
Exactly, exactly. But I think more long term, he would be the super utility guy.
Yeah.
If
you
have a solution at every position.
But that guy can play every day.
Exactly. We saw Brock Holt do it, and I think he can be a better version of Brock Holt.
Yeah, definitely. We saw Ben Zobrist do it for many years. I mean, there are plenty of examples of guys that can play near every day. I mean, even I will get into the Christian Campbell stuff, but I think we're both ready to see him go down for 15 days and kind of reset things and figure out where things are going wrong. It's just, if you thought Trevor Story was bad in the last month, since May 1st, Christian Campbell has been 21% worse than Trevor Story by WRC+. It's just a three. He's 97% worse than league average in the last month. Yeah, it's a single digit. Like, Story's the second worst, and he's all the way up at 24. It's a 137 batting average with a 383 OPS. So it's just, and we're trying to win baseball games here. At a certain point, like, I think he looks lost at the plate. It's a 30% strikeout rate. He is kind of getting BABIPed to death a little bit, only a 180 BABIP. But, like, at a certain point, you're also running a 5% walk rate and a 30% K rate. So, like, I just think going down, resetting, like, it doesn't mean anything about his future. Like, I still think he's going to be a really good player, but, like, guys have to go down. It's not – development isn't linear. That is, for however long we do this podcast, I'm going to beat that drum until the end of it. Like, that is going to be the overarching theme. Development isn't linear for these guys. So I think just a reset would be nice for Campbell. So even that can slot Rafael in at second base, or Story in at second base, because Story's arm is cooked.
Yeah.
So Rafael at shortstop, Story at second base, if you're that hell-bent on keeping him in the lineup.
Yeah, and that's honestly where I'm leading right now, too. I know we were talking before we hit the record button, but I think Campbell has to go down to AAA. You can't keep putting him out there in major league games and just hoping it'll turn around. Like, I am very confident that a 2 week or so reset fixes pretty much everything. Whether it has to be a longer stint in AAA, that's okay. But regardless, you cannot keep hoping that he'll figure it out in the major leagues, because, like I said with the rotation, these games matter a hell of a lot more given the hole you've put yourselves in. And you can't keep putting Christian Campbell in this lineup every day if he's giving you absolutely nothing.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I just to circle back to the Willier Duran debate. Willier hasn't been that much better than any of these guys. He's rocking a 77 WRC plus in the last month, hitting 213 with a quick maths. Oh, Zach versus numbers is, Jesus, this is not looking good. 665. Put that one in the win column for Zach.
Heyo.
On that quick math, 665 OPS. with a 23% strikeout rate, which isn't bad, but only a 3.5% walk rate. So like, he's just not getting the job done either. Like, so I don't know. It, to me, I think that the Gold Glove caliber defense in right field and being younger and having more team control is more valuable. Like I said, like, I think ultimately this is something that you sort out in the off season and just roll, like, cause I think your best lineup right now has Roman Anthony in it and Sadon Rafaela in it. So wherever that slots in, like, it's, I think it's pretty easy to say that Christian Campbell's your least valuable player in the lineup right now, like pretty comfortably.
Yeah. I mean,
so
I would say Trevor Story's not that far behind.
Obviously not. We're talking about the two worst hitters in the sport in the last month. Mm-hmm. So like, obviously he's not that far behind, but yeah, I think ultimately the decision should just come down to, what do you get the best offer for, Duran or Abreu in the offseason?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whoever you get the best offer for, that's what you do.
And honestly, that's more palatable to me than giving up on one of them midseason, like you said. Like,
yeah. It's just waving the white flag because people were beating this drum like all week on Twitter, being like, oh, just like, just trade Jaron Duran for, and I said it, Bryce Miller on the Mariners, and the Mariners don't make trades. Jerry DePoto doesn't trade, but, or just a young controllable starter that's already in the big leagues. Those teams are looking to hang on to their young controllable starters for their playoff run. They're not in any rush to trade them. Like, if you're trading a guy like Jaron Duran or Willy Abreu, you're probably talking about getting guys that are close to the big leagues but haven't cracked yet, whether they be in Double A or Triple A. So, like, how many guys are we talking about here? Like, probably not many. Are the Cincinnati Reds in a rush to trade Chase Burns? Probably not. I wouldn't be if I were them. Like, if these are, like, if that is an offer, like, which, like I said, I don't think it would be. If that's an offer, then I think you, like, that's a no-brainer. You take and run. But, like, what do the offers look like in the offseason? You can maybe get more established guys in the offseason because that's when teams are looking to make more fundamental changes to their team and not just add a spark for a playoff run. Like, I mean, obviously with Duran, you're talking about 3 years of service, but so he's going to be a part of that team moving forward, but you always see bigger blockbuster trades in the offseason and guys available that you don't think you're going to get.
Yeah, yeah, because it's a time where teams are reevaluating what they have. In midseason, it's more of a desperation move than like, let's fully map this out. Let's fully see where both teams are at and see if something can match up, rather than like shelling out 5 prospects for fucking Luis Garcia.
Yeah, which if you get a team, like I said, I think if the Reds were dumb enough to offer you Chase Burns for Jaron Duran, you go, yes, sir, thank you, and you run away laughing. Same for, like, I mean, there are a handful of other teams that I would do that for, but a lot of those teams aren't, like I said, aren't looking to give up those guys. And a lot of the teams with pitching surplus, honestly, aren't really playoff teams either. Like, the Pirates, for example, they have so much young pitching, but they're not trading for Jaron Duran. Like, what?
Yeah, the Marlins.
Yeah, like, all these teams with those young controllable starters that we're talking about aren't trying to compete this year, so.
No. And I, yeah.
Which honestly, maybe means Willier lines up better for some of them, maybe.
Could be. Yeah, I mean, just in terms of age, it, like.
Yeah, the it, age and tough. Service time.
It's tough because both Duran and Abreu have their flaws. To me, Abreu's flaws are a little bit more glaring, just given how streaky he is. I think Duran's more of a consistent at bat and a guy you can put in your lineup every day. Whereas opposed to Willy Abreu, you don't even have him starting half the time versus lefties. Like, that's still where we're at. Right.
Well, that's, I said this to you on, I think it was Tuesday, if Willier were not trusting him to play against lefties at this point in his career, then they should just be shopping him anyways, because you clearly don't trust the player at this point. And like, it drives me insane that Marcelo Meyer is sitting 2 days in a row against the lefty. Mm-hmm. We've been saying that this is going to be the case for him and Roman Anthony for months when they get here. And so I was expecting it, and I still am angry about it. But like, at this point, Willier Abreu, Tristan Casas before he got hurt was the same way. We were platooning Tristan Casas. If these guys can't hit lefties, then you don't believe in them enough to continue to trot them out there every day. So you should just be shopping them, which I guess they did with Tristan Casas. They tried like hell to trade him.
Yeah, and not to mention on the Meyer thing, we saw a bunch of different opportunities where they could have pinch hit him late against a righty, and they still didn't in those 2 days. And I just don't understand.
the worst thing that could have happened is Trevor Story getting hot for fucking 2 days in Atlanta, because in Milwaukee, we saw him get pinch hit for in a big spot late. And then he gets hot in Atlanta, and then they're now he's rebuilt all that trust that he lost, and he goes back up there to stink up the joint every single time. Like we said, there were so many opportunities in the Angels series to pinch hit Meyer in there, especially for Story against a righty, and they just didn't. And I think they would have done that if he hadn't. Honestly, I don't even know if he would still be on the team if he hadn't gotten hot in Atlanta.
Yeah, that three game Linsanity run from Trevor Story needs to be studied, because he's gone exactly back to who he was before that Atlanta series up to this point. And
my friend Joe, he said that it was like giving a dog like a cheeseburger before you put it down.
Oh my God. Maybe a little bit of a morbid comparison, but I guess it fits.
Yeah, literally, that's what it was. But it's, instead of putting it down afterwards, you just built back up all its confidence, and you're like, all right, go get it.
Like, yeah.
I don't know. It's maddening at this point. I don't even know what you do, because like we said, there it's just the little things, and at some point, they're just a bad baseball team. Like, at what point do you just – and it seems like Cora's getting close to that point where he's like, I don't know. I don't know what you want from me, guys. Like, at some point, it's on me. They're just not listening. They're not getting it. Something isn't clicking, and they have all the pieces. And it seems like nothing's going to change. Craig Breslow today on the Greg Hill Show was like, we need to hold our players accountable. We need to, like, what was it? I texted you the phrasing that he used. Let me see. He's consequential steps to turn this thing around is what he said. And then they asked him about the Nesson deleting the video of the beef for some reason. What consequential steps are you taking, Craig? What consequential steps have been taken to turn this ship around? Because so far, nobody is seeing any of them. You got swept by the Brewers last week, and your big move was welcome back. What's his name? Nick Birdie? Zach Birdie?
Yeah, Nick Birdie.
Nick Birdie. Zach Birdie's also a failed prospect, I believe, too, as is Nick Birdie. You bring back up Nick Birdie and sends Liam Hendricks to the injured list. That is not a consequential step. Like, that is nothing. Like, oh, we are our eighth guy in the bullpen. We just put him on the Phantom IL after he bitched about his role. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not a consequential step. Firing the hitting coach is a consequential step. Sending your overpaid veteran, Trevor Story, to the bench is a consequential step. Calling up the number one prospect in baseball is a consequential step. And they're just not doing it. And so, like, he can say, oh, what are we doing? We're taking consequential steps to turn this thing around. No, the fuck you're not. So don't lie about it.
It seems like everyone's just beating around the bush right now because they don't really know what they're doing. No, like, that's where I'm at. And I'm tired of hearing all of the same things from Breslow to Cora to pretty much everyone who they put a microphone.
Breslow and Cora don't even say the same thing. Like, Breslow would be like, oh, Roman still has some boxes to check. We're still looking for some things out of him. And Cora will be like, oh, he's busting the door down. Like, I can't fucking believe this guy isn't up here yet. Like, if you were to ask Cora, give Cora truth serum and be like, what is your best lineup right now? Do you think he's not writing Roman Anthony's name in left field?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I think there's 175,000% chance that name's on the list.
Yeah.
And it's just like, so they contradict each other, and it's just, Cora's already run so many guys out of town at this point. Like, he hated Heim. I think he hates Breslow. Like, and Breslow, I saw this on Twitter. Breslow is trying to do a favor for whoever the GM is in 2032, because history tells us it's certainly not going to be him. So, like, what are we, like, we're fucking around with, like, this team is completely drowning, and we're fucking around with Roman Anthony's service time. And this is something that I've said since we started having the conversation of Roman Anthony needs to be up here, and I will continue to say it until he's up here. You're the Boston Red Sox. If Roman Anthony is the player that you think he is, he should be locked up long before it ever gets to the point of him hitting free agency in 2032, as opposed to 2033 or whatever the years might be. He is that type of talent. So he should be here because your season is now completely floundering when you had realistic World Series expectations and he's just down there tearing the cover off the ball in AAA. And they're saying, oh, he still has boxes to tick. We won't tell you what boxes, but he's still got them to tick. While your manager's saying he's busting down the door. Like, the messaging isn't clear. The messaging is convoluted. My friend said that Craig Breslow is just Gerard Mayo, where he either says something like he just says a whole bunch of word salad nonsense, or he says the dumbest possible thing that he could have said. And I feel like Breslow has less of the, dude, why the fuck would you say that? but way more of the incomprehensible word salad nonsense. Like, that's what he's like. He's like AI. If you at Grok, what should I say to this question? Like, that's what Craig Breslow is. Yeah. ChatGPT, what should I say to this question?
Like, at this point, my brain is mush in regards to this team because I just have no idea what the game plan is going forward. But I wanna put a little bit of light on this because I think it's just right on the nose. And Jeff Passan always is right on the nose. But he was on the Section 10 podcast yesterday, and he said, every day Roman Anthony's not in the big leagues, that's a day that he could have won a game for this team. What are we waiting for? What are we waiting for? That is the best way to summarize this just total mishandling of the top prospect in baseball. And
someone on Twitter suggested that the Royals spent an extra $8 to $10 million by calling up Jack Caglione before the Super 2 deadline slash obviously the Rookie of the Year implications. If the Kansas City Royals are willing to make that sacrifice and the Boston Red Sox are not, that doesn't make you smarter than them just because you think it does. It makes you fucking dumber than them. It makes you substantially dumber than them because they're an organization that needs to pinch pennies. They're an organization that would need to worry about service time manipulation the same way the Pirates would. You're the Boston Red Sox. Just because you think you're smarter than everyone doesn't mean that you actually are, because this team is completely lost right now. And I don't care about putting the pressure on him to be the savior, because it's at that point anyways. No matter when he gets called up, the hype is built up too much. And I've said it over again. And like I said, we probably sound like a broken record every week coming on talking about the same mistakes. But Cora said it himself. It's the same mistakes that they keep making. And it's not just on the field. It's in the front office too.
I just don't see it changing. I really don't. I've lost all sense of optimism on this season. Going into this year, I was over the moon with the additions. And now you see those additions are the only ones giving you any signs of life. And it's just like...
One of them's hurt.
And one of them's hurt. And
just a small bright spot. Small bright spot. Alex Bregman said that he felt like his recovery was going at warp speed, and he feels like he's progressing a lot faster than he initially thought he would.
I like that.
He still didn't put a timetable on it, which I think is smart, but it seems like things are moving in the right direction. I just pray to God whenever he's healthy that Marcelo Meyer has shown enough to stay up here, because I can't stand to watch Trevor Story anymore.
Yeah, and you need to see a little more from him until you get to that point. I mean, to be honest, if you or I were making the decisions, I would still, given Meyer hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been lighting the world on
he's
fire.
Been okay. Yeah, he's been all right. I'm going to pull up the Savant right now. This is the first time I've looked at it. It also probably doesn't tell a whole lot because he's only had a handful of appearances, especially seeing that he sat. But he hasn't done anything that's wowed me, but he also hasn't done anything where I've been like, what the fuck are you doing?
Maybe the base running in
that's the only thing. But that's like I'm willing to chalk that one up to a rookie mistake.
Exactly.
It was his first however many games in the big leagues. I'm willing to be like, all right, well, and he hasn't done it since. I mean, granted, like I said, he hasn't really played, but like, He's been league average pretty much exactly defensively. The strikeout rate is a little bit high, and the chase and whiff percentage are a little bit high, but like that's to be expected at first. Like I can't watch any more Trevor Story. At least with Marcelo, we're going to watch him and we're going to watch him grow, and we know that he's building towards something. Mm-hmm. The only thing Trevor Story's building towards is the retirement home.
Yeah, yeah. I think I guess I'm pretty much out of things to say. Maybe a couple last questions for you. Is by next recording day, which will probably be next Thursday on another off day, is Roman Anthony up here or no?
No.
No, I don't think so either.
Because he's in Worcester. He's playing in Worcester tonight. I don't think they're – although they did start Jaren Duran off in the Bronx. I don't think they're going to have him play in the Bronx. I would guess that barring an injury, they want him to start out on the road. And then your next two series, I believe, are at home against Tampa and then at home against the Yankees.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine that we see him debut at Fenway.
Could we see him debut in Seattle maybe the week after? Like, it has to be this month.
Fun fact, that is where Andrew Benintendi made his major league debut.
Oh, one of my favorite ballparks in the entire league also.
I need to get out there. My cousin lives in Seattle and has since like 2016. And I just have never gone out there to go to a game.
Dude, get there. It is beautiful. I love the whole city. One of my favorites for sure.
Yeah, I drove out there when he moved out there with him, and they were away or else we would have gone to a game. That's when I saw Miller Park, or whatever the fuck they call it now.
American Family Field.
Yeah, no, Miller Park. It was actually still Miller Park when I saw it. So, but yeah, so that's where I saw that. And then we stopped in Minnesota, the Twins were on the road, and then obviously we wound up in Seattle and the Mariners were on the road, so I didn't get to cross those two off. But I should just – the issue is it's such a, like, shit matchup, Red Sox-Mariners, that it's always, like, a weekday matchup. If it was a weekend matchup, it would be so much easier to go.
Yeah, but, right.
And it sucks because this year they're playing at Seattle and then at San Francisco. I would love to do that just trip. Seattle and San Francisco, crank both of those out.
Yeah, this Oracle's another really nice one.
Number one. That's the one I want to go to the most.
The West Coast ones. Like, if you're out there, you should go to Petco too. That one's a banger.
Yeah, I want to get there too.
The LA ones are, I think, overrated. I don't think other people would agree with that. Maybe the Angels, but I think Dodger Stadium is vastly overrated.
The only thing I've ever heard about Dodger Stadium is what a clusterfuck it is to get in and out of.
It's horrible.
And it sounds like it's worse than Gillette, which seems impossible.
Oh, my God. God,
That feels almost impossible to be worse than Gillette as far as traffic
goes. You compound, basically getting out of Gillette is the same as getting out of Dodger Stadium, but you're also in L.A. Getting out of Foxborough, you're in Foxborough. So.
I mean,
how much traffic can there be outside of just people getting out of the stadium?
Well, once you get onto the expressway, once you get off of Route 1, you're fine.
Exactly.
That makes sense. I need to get to more like new parks. Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't been to a new park in years. I haven't been to a new park since I saw the Trop, I think. Or maybe Nationals Park. Was that the same year? I think maybe that was the same year that I went to. I think I went to both the same year. I think I went to the Trop first and then Nationals. So Nationals Park was the last new one I saw.
Rip the Trop, man. I think it's coming back at some point.
It smells like a fucking youth hockey arena. Like, it literally smells like a youth hockey rink. It makes no sense. It's just like... I don't even know, embedded in my brain, the Trop, the smell of the Trop. It was... Yeah, that.
Oh man,
I'll tell you the story of my experience at the Trop to not recording.
Okay,
but it's pretty funny. I went with my ex girlfriend, so that's a little teaser. And then I think later that summer is when I went to Nationals Park, and we were there for the Rick Porcello bases clearing.
I remember that like it was yesterday.
Yeah, 2018. Shout out the 2018 Red Sox.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe it wasn't definitely wasn't the same year because me and my girlfriend broke up before the baseball season started that year. So yeah, it definitely was not that year. That's a completely random aside. But that's what this team is doing to us.
Where we're at.
Yapping about ballparks.
Love a good ballpark talk. Did you have anything else Red Sox to add? I'm kind of exhausted. My takes.
The Campbell first base experience is over.
He played
zero games there and was doing it while also trying to combat being the worst player in the sport currently. Mm-hmm. I know he was already slumping when they started to work him out at first base. I don't think that excuses it. I think that makes it worse that he was already struggling there. And then they just were like, oh, Romy Gonzalez is back. Thanks for trying, Christian. Why the fuck would you put that on his plate if you weren't even going to play him there? They said all along, they were like, it's not a long-term option. So why? Like, what are we, like, it's not a long-term option, we don't think. We think long-term he's a second baseman. Then why are we having one of our top prospects, our second-best prospect, a top 10 prospect in the sport, while he currently is the worst hitter in the sport, trying to learn first base, trying to play center field? He's not very good at second base to begin with. Why are we trying go out there and try first base? And by the way, we're not going to play you there for a single game. We're going to end the experiment the second that Romy Gonzalez gets back.
Thank God Romy Gonzalez is back.
Thank God. Thank God for him and Abraham Toro. And Abraham Toro has been good. He's been – every Red Sox team needs a random journeyman quad A first baseman. It's just – it's for the lore. It was written in the stars. Abraham Toro is this year's quad A journeyman veteran first baseman. He's been great. But if when Alex Bregman is healthy, if he's seeing the field over Marcelo Meyer, my brain is going to melt.
I wouldn't be upset if he was your everyday first baseman. Like, obviously they have to try to make additions come trade deadline season and everything like that. But if you have Toro and Romy Gonzalez as nothing more than speed off the bench, that is okay with me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with him being on the bench. Like I said, I think every team needs that. Although history would tell you that the only team that has ever had one of those players is Kyle Schwarber, and he's a lot better than quad A. So it speaks to that. And even Justin Turner was probably better than quad A in his year here.
He was,
but that team went nowhere. But Dom Smith and Abraham Toro are certainly in that quad A category. But I don't know, like, we're talking about hanging on to too many of these veterans and stuff like that. Like, we can't be preventing Marcelo Meyer from playing every day because Abraham Toro needs to play against lefties.
That reminds me that I want to touch on Blaze Jordan, who has reached AAA. Yeah. And if he's tearing the cover off the ball in AAA like he was in Portland, then I don't see why you don't give him a chance this year.
I'm not opposed to anything. I was wondering why they weren't trying the password at first.
Yeah. Like, just, you got to try something. And if you can bring in a guy with more upside than Abraham Toro or Romy Gonzalez, then if you're going to punt and call this another development year, then why aren't all the young guys up here?
I think at a certain point, Blaze Jordan is probably better than Abraham Toro. Like, he's running a hot streak right now, but is Blaze Jordan probably better at baseball than Abraham Toro? I would say, yeah, probably. Yeah. I would guess. I mean, obviously, he still would have to continue to tear the cover off the ball in AAA, but, like, he's righty, too, so maybe they look at that as a negative.
Maybe.
He can't platoon with Romy. But, like, again, like, if we're blocking these guys for Romy Gonzalez and Abraham Toro and, like, Abraham Almonte and any of the other idiots that they've brought in. Yeah, any of the other idiots that they've brought in over the course of the last however many years, then, like, we're fundamentally flawed as an organization. Like, you can't fix stupid at that point.
Jose Peraza?
Yeah. Like, the legend of 2021, Jose Iglesias, who was so good that everyone's like, fuck, we can't put this guy on the playoff roster?
I know. Yeah, that was fun. A fun run there. And I mean,
baseball was fun.
The last time baseball was fun, some might say, as fans of this organization.
Yeah, now they just make me want to die. Now they're just fun Boston Red Sox fact. They're ruining my life.
which I don't know if it gets worse from there, but it could with this Yankee series.
I've got some ideas for my new memes.
So. Maybe keep those under wraps until they debut. But
they will. They'll be kept secret.
If the Yankees series goes poorly, I would hope to see another one there.
Oh yeah, we got one ready to go for the Yankees sweep. God. If the Yankees sweep the Red Sox this weekend, they unlock a new fun Boston Red Sox fact.
I don't think we have to do a deep dive on pitching matchups. I'm sure they haven't even been named yet. But do you want to drop a prediction for the series?
I got the Yankees shoving it up our asses for 3 games.
Yep. I'm right there.
Crochet's pitching. So they're going to lose 1-0 on Saturday when Crochet pitches.
Yeah, so they'll still get swept.
Oh, no, never mind. I changed my prediction.
Okay.
Red Sox will win on Saturday.
Why is that?
They're facing Ryan Yarbrough, who they fucking rocked when he was on the Rays.
I do remember that. Yeah. Well,
I got the Red Sox 1 out of 3. They're shoving it up Yarbrough's ass.
Yeah, this is my thing, is the Yankees still are not that good of a baseball team, but given the state of the Red Sox, I guess I can't say anything.
No, we have no room to talk. It's like on Monday and Tuesday, fans at the Angels games were chanting, fuck the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking 10 games back of them.
Fuck doing the wave.
Like, yeah, Caroline. doing the wave. Sweet Caroline. Fuck the Yankees. Yankees suck. And I don't love Yankees suck chants when you're not playing the Yankees anyways. Mm-hmm. But like, you certainly can't be doing it when you're losing to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
No, like definitely
and the Yankees are 37-23. They're 14 games over 500 and 9 games ahead of you in the standings. So we can't be going, fuck the Yankees. Okay, dude.
Yeah, at a certain point, I think Fenway just needs to develop some sort of feel, some sort of atmosphere of where you're at, because
it's just a place that fucking like 21-year-olds go to drink.
Yeah,
like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm going to Fenway next Friday to drink and then going out afterwards. But like, that's different.
Is that the 13th?
Yes.
Oh, I'll actually be there too.
Oh,
hey-o.
Beautiful.
I will probably also be drunk.
Yeah, so it's different of like going and like actually caring about the games and drinking as opposed to like what some of these crowds are and are going to continue to turn into, especially if things go into the shitter and tickets become like $7. They're just going to be a place for college kids to go pregame. And yeah, like those people don't give a fuck about the these people don't give a fuck about the results on the fields. They care about they can go and be in an environment to drink and get ready to go out, and tickets are cheap and it'll be fun. Like,
yeah,
that's what it is. Like, people, like, they don't care if like, oh, let's do the wave, we're in a baseball game, that's what you do with the wave. They don't give a fuck about what's happening on the field.
No And I feel like that's been a constant thing for a long time. It's just when things have been going bad for now going on 4 years, it's like, how much is too much of this?
Well, that's the ownership wants. They want to sell the Fenway experience. And like, what they'll tell you is I've long been beating the drum. I don't think that Sweet Caroline should play when they're losing. Like, if you're losing in the middle of the eighth, you don't Sweet Caroline. You only do it when you're winning, because like, you're down 9-1 to the Yankees. Sweet Caroline, like, give me a fucking break. Like, oh yeah, times have never been so good. I can think of plenty of times when things have been way better than this. We're getting our fucking dicks kicked in. Like, it drives me. That is my number one pet peeve, is fucking Sweet Caroline when they're losing. And all
the amount of times you text about that.
Oh, Kyle Teal getting the call.
Really?
Yeah.
Before Roman Anthony, huh?
Good work, Craig.
Maybe that's a good spot to end it, huh? Jeez.
Good work, Craig. 2 thumbs up. Oh! Fireworks!
I don't know how that... Did you do that?
No, I just... How did I do that? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how I did that. Nice.
I don't either.
2 thumbs up for Craig Breslow. Cued fireworks on my screen. That was something. What a way to end it.
Yeah, I guess so. Man, oh man. I don't have anything to say for the end of this episode. As always, thank you so much for listening. We'll see where we're at next week, but regardless, we will be here again next week. So see you guys then.
Peace.